and thank you for standing by. This call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. All participants are in a listen-only mode for the duration of today's conference. I would now like to turn the call over to your host, Ann Evans. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle, and welcome everyone to this call. I'm Ann Evans. You've been getting messages from me. I am the director for the International Trade Administration in Connecticut. We're thrilled to have you with us today. A little bit of housekeeping. Everybody will be on mute, as the operator said. Also, we have had an incredible response. Those of you who have registered after about 12:15 did not get the copy of the PowerPoint. We just ran out of time getting them out, but I will get them to you as soon as the call is over. So we're thrilled to have you with us. I would like to introduce our welcomer and moderator, Ian Steff, who's the Assistant Secretary for Global Markets at the International Trade Administration. He is also the Director General of the United States Commercial and Foreign Service. Ian will be our moderator, and I'm handing it over to Ian.
Well, thank you, Ann, and thanks for the great work that you do in the Northeast region and for the U.S. Commercial Service. And thank you for working with our partners at the Department of the Treasury and the Small Business Administration to bring information on these important and timely programs to manufacturers and service providers in your region and around the country. As Assistant Secretary for Global Markets and Director General of the U.S. and Foreign Commercial Service, I have the privilege of overseeing a tremendous team in over 70 markets around the world and 100 U.S. Cities. These trade and investment professionals work on your behalf each and every day, and they are a team that works. They're a team that delivers. Many of the companies on this call are exporters who work with the International Trade Administration's U.S. Commercial Service or are potential exporters. So you're either current clients or future clients, and we hope to assist you in expanding business globally. Our worldwide trade and investment professionals focus on four pillars: trade and export promotion for U.S. companies, advocacy for U.S. companies bidding on foreign government tenders, commercial diplomacy to remove trade barriers, and attracting inward-bound investment year-round through our Select USA program. There are many ways to leverage our global network to get deals done, even when you may not be able to travel to these markets. And our teams have developed innovative and creative avenues to continue our activities on virtual platforms in many different locations and focused on many sectors. Whether it is your first export sale or expanding your business to additional markets, we offer the experience and virtual services needed to grow your international sales of U.S.-made products and services. To reach your local U.S. Export Assistance Center and explore our programs and services, please visit trade.gov and let us help your business take its first step to global markets. I know this has been a challenging time for all of us in adapting to the shifting landscape and determining how to maintain forward momentum on our activities. Together, we all need to continue to work to adopt policies that promote competitiveness, create jobs, and encourage investment here at home. The International Trade Administration continues to be a willing and committed partner to this success, and we have been working with our partners at SBA and the Treasury Department to help ensure your businesses are on track to becoming more competitive, more vibrant, and more prosperous. Today's call will include an SBA Paycheck Protection Program update from Mike Valenti, Associate Administrator with SBA, and to brief on the new exciting CARES Act Main Street program that will provide liquidity to small and medium American businesses. And this will be Adam Larrick, a great partner and a counselor to the Secretary of the Treasury, and Teresa Berry, Vice President in the Supervision, Regulation, and Credit, SRC Department at the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. Welcome, Mike Valenti, SBA Associate Administrator. And everyone, I very much look forward to hearing from you in terms of the incredible support the PPPE has been to the American businesses. Congratulations. Mike Vellante, we'll hand it over to Adam and Teresa and next. So I'll turn it over to Mike. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon to those of you on the East Coast. My name is Mike Vellante. I'm the Associate Administrator for the Small Business Administration, responsible for our 68 district offices around the country. I want to thank Ann. I want to thank Ian from Commerce. I want to also thank Adam and Teresa from Treasury. I think this is a very good example of what the administration is doing as it relates to the recovery from what has taken place. It's an all-in-one, using every resource available that the government has to try and help get businesses back open and back flourishing the way they were. I also want to give a special shout-out to Wendell Davis, who's our regional administrator in Region 1, which covers New England. But in addition to that, Wendell has been a pivotal person at the SBA working on the manufacturing angle and element, even long before the COVID-19 outbreak. The manufacturing has had an amazing comeback under the administration, and Wendell has been working very diligently, not just in New England, but around the country in that regard. So thank you, Wendell, for helping put this together. As of today, the PPP program has put out over $500 billion to small businesses through almost or just over $4.5 million loans. The average loan size, believe it or not, despite what you may read in the newspaper, is about $112,000. last Thursday, Congress passed and the President signed the PPP Flexibility Act, which I think probably the best way to describe it was a recognition of what we are facing as opposed to what was passed when the original PPP became law back in the end of March. back then, the thought was that this would be a fairly short-term kind of situation and people would be back on their feet and businesses would be open as usual in a short period of time. Obviously, with the things that were done with the government in local level and state level in terms of shelter in place and closing businesses, that didn't occur. So to the credit of everyone, they went back to the drawing board and came up with some revisions and flexibilities, and that's why they call it the PPP Flexibility Act. And let me just go through a couple of things about it. Excuse me. That I think are relevant to everyone listening. First, the initial act had an 8-week window to spend the money that was loaned for your payroll or other overheads expenses. This PPP Flexibility Act extends that to 24 weeks maximum or until December 31st, 2020. So it gives and recognizes that it's going to take a longer period of time, and those that have already gotten loans have more time if they so choose. Those that are coming in now into the portal to get loans will have more time to spend them once they're dispersed. As of today, there are about $130 billion in money that is yet to be dispersed. That it's available for any new applications that people want to make. The other part that was important was in the initial act, it was a 75-25 split. A minimum of 75% had to be spent on personnel. Another 25% could be spent on things like rent, mortgage, utilities. And if you didn't meet the 75% minimum, then whatever the difference was would become a loan and not forgivable. That threshold has been dropped in the new Flexibility Act. It is now 60-40 split. You have to spend a minimum of 60% on any loan that you get on personnel and be able to show that expenditure over the 24-week period to have the entire loan forgiven. also what they call the cliff. There was some concern about whether or not if you didn't spend the 60%, if the whole amount would be due as a loan. And the answer to that was cleared up very quickly by Congress and in SBA and Treasury. That is not the case. So, for example, if you got a loan and you spent 58% of it on personnel, then only the remaining 2% would be considered a loan and not forgivable. So that lowered the threshold and made it, I think, a lot more attractive to small businesses. It does extend the term of the loan from 2 to 5 years, as long as both the borrower and the lender agree. And then they have what they call safe harbors, which I think for legislation that is changing, kind of like, I don't want to say moving the goalposts, but it is definitely something that kind of morphs as it goes along. One of the things, again, I think they realized is that getting your employees back might not have been as simple as folks thought for whatever reason. In some cases, people are opting to continue to take unemployment insurance and not come back to work. So there's a safe harbor provision for that. There's also a safe harbor provision if a business can't find qualified employees, that helps reduce their liability on a loan. And then also there's another safe harbor that's in there if a business is not able to get to get back to pre-COVID-19 standard, because, you know, especially in the hospitality industry, which has been hit the hardest, that's a real problem. So, you know, I think one of the things that's happened is that over the course of the last 2 months, when it first was initiated, there's been a recognition and an understanding of things that needed to change. And they've been, you know, those changes have been made. I've used the analogy, and Wendell knows this too, because we deal with all of the repercussions of these changes on a daily basis with our district offices, who are usually the first ones that hear from both borrowers and lenders, that it's kind of like launching an airplane and then trying to build it while you're flying. And so we think that some of these things that they've addressed in the PPP Flexibility Act, which passed last week, will help both the borrower and the lender be able to address issues and needs that they have. There is still plenty of money left, and we would encourage folks to look into that. Visit SBA.gov. We have an entire section of our website devoted to COVID-19 response. And again, I just want to thank everyone for being on the call and thank our partners, both the Treasury and the Commerce, for putting this together. And with that, let me turn it over to Adam. Adam?
Mike, thank you very much. First of all, I hope we're not trying to build the Main Street airplane while we're flying it.
It's not fun, Adam, let me tell you, so I don't recommend it.
The team at Treasury and our client and the team at the Federal Reserve have spent a lot of time. I mean, the Main Street program, when the Secretary asked me to lead the team at the Treasury on the Main Street program, the first thing he said was it may be the most important program to stabilize the economy. The second thing was it's the most complex program we've ever tried to do. And I think we've learned that here at the Treasury and at the Federal Reserve. But before we start, Mike, I'd like to say I want to thank Wendell Davis. He is the one who originated the whole concept of this webinar. By finding me at the Treasury and saying, would I help explain this to the many companies that work with the SBA? Ian and I have spent most of the last 3 days locked up on another project, so I know him well. And I want to say that Teresa Barry up at the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston, the team at the Federal Reserve, this has been a true Federal Reserve Treasury effort to get this program up and running, and I think we're almost there. I hope we're almost there, and I'm confident we are. Let me first say what the goal of the Main Street program is. The goal of the Main Street program is to help small and medium-sized companies that were good companies in sound financial condition and operating well and doing business as they should be before the crisis who have now had a serious impact from the crisis that has caused their business to turn down, and to help these companies get to the other side. In essence, provide bridge financing so they can reach the other side when the economy comes back and their business returns to normal. They can still be in business and still have their employees and still operate and return to business as usual. That is the goal of the program. It's not a grant program. It's a loan program. What we're basically doing is offering, through with the Federal Reserve, loans for small and medium-sized companies. They're term loans. Their maturity is 5 years. I mean, Therese will go over the details. And the idea is that that will provide the financing for the companies to keep going until the economy returns. What was interesting about this project, one of the things was how, since no one had ever attempted to reach this group of companies in the U.S. economy, we had, which is very unusual, unique in Federal Reserve U.S. Treasury programs, we had a comment period. We sent out indicative terms and conditions. Then for 3 weeks, we received comments through a website and through letters. And in the end, we had more than 3,500 comments. And I know that because I read every single one of them. And they were very useful. And that is, that led us to adjust the terms and conditions of the program twice, including as recently as last Monday when we finalized them, was based on the comments and the feedback, both from banks, from borrowers, and other stakeholders. Finally, in terms of timing, this has been a long process. It's been complicated. The operational aspects that the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston has had to work on are very difficult, given the number of loans, the number of banks, but they've done an incredible job on the operational front. And as the Secretary has said, we expect to have the program up and running before the end of the month and providing loans to clients by then, and where the U.S. government will basically be taking on 95% of the loan to each and every one of the borrowers. I'd like to finish my prepared remarks, because I want to give Theresa plenty of time to explain the details, and then leave time for questions, which I think are actually the most interesting part. Mike, thank you.
So thank you, Adam, and thank you to our host for giving us an opportunity to talk about this program, and thank you all for your interest in letting us try to explain it to you today. So I won't spend too much time on the first slide of the deck is essentially what Adam described in terms of what the goal of the program is. So I think I'll start on slide 3 and just give you a high-level overview of how we are organizing this program. So the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston has established a special purpose vehicle to purchase participations in loans extended under the Main Street program. The special purpose vehicle will be authorized to purchase up to $600 billion in loan participations. The U.S. Treasury will be providing equity of up to $75 billion to the special purpose vehicle, and the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston will provide funding to the SPV in the form of discount window loans. We plan to roll out the program in 2 stages. The first stage will be lender registration, which we hope to launch shortly. Once launched, lenders will be able to register for the program through an online portal. We are working through eligible lenders, as the Federal Reserve cannot lend directly to borrowers, so borrowers interested in getting these loans will have to go to an eligible lender. The lenders will then go to the portal, which will be announced on the bostonfed.org website. When we go live, we will announce that we are ready to accept registrations, and we will provide a link to an online portal where lenders can go to sign up for the program. There's not a separate registration form. Lenders will be able to submit required documentation and information directly through the portal. And we've designed the portal in a way that it will walk the users through the process, and we'll have some help features like a call center and a chat feature to help the lenders along the way. So hopefully it will be not too hard to follow. and then we'll do a second phase. We will follow up that at a bit later date with accepting loans for participation into the portal. That release is going to take a little bit more time, particularly in light of, as Adam mentioned, we wanted to make sure that the program more fully met the needs of the borrowers, so we made some recent changes to the terms, so it will take a little bit more time to incorporate those changes into the program. But hopefully that will not be too much of a lag from when we open for accepting lenders into the program. For those of you who have our slides, if you turn to slide 4, here's the breakdown of the types of loans that we are accepting participations in. So there are 3 different types of facilities that we will accept in the program. There's a new loan facility, a priority loan facility, and an expanded loan facility. The new loan facility provides for a new loan with a minimum loan size of $250,000 and a maximum loan size of $35 million and is subject to a maximum debt to adjusted EBITDA of 4x. The priority loan facility provides loans with a minimum loan size of $250,000 to $50 million and is subject to a maximum debt to adjusted EBITDA of 6x. These loans must be senior or pari passu with the borrower's other loans or debt instruments, with the exception of mortgage debt. And the priority loans may be used to refinance existing debt owed by the borrower to a different lender at the time of origination. The expanded loan facility is used to increase or upsize a borrower's existing loan. The upsized tranche may range in size from $10 million to $300 million and is subject to a maximum debt to adjusted EBITDA limit of 6x. The upsized tranche must be senior or pari passu with the borrower's other loans or debt instruments, again with the exception of mortgage debt. For both the NLF and PLF, we would purchase a 95% interest in any of the loans that meet these eligibility requirements. For the expanded loan facility, we would purchase a 95% interest in the upsized tranche of the eligible loans. All 3 loan types, as Adam mentioned earlier, have a 5-year term with principal deferred for 2 years and interest deferred for 1 year. Amortization would be on a 15% in years 3 and 4 and 70% for year 5. And prepayments would be allowed on all of the facilities without penalty. Moving on to the next slide, this is just a slide describing the eligible lenders. As noted earlier, the special purpose vehicle will have to purchase participations from an eligible lender. Eligible lenders include U.S. federally insured depository institutions, meaning banks, savings associations, credit unions, U.S. branches or agencies of foreign banks, U.S. bank holding companies, U.S. savings and loan holding companies, U.S. intermediate holding companies of foreign banking organizations, and any of U.S. subsidiary of the above-mentioned institutions. So a borrower looking to get a loan under this program will have to go to one of those types of lenders to start the process. Moving on to eligible borrowers, there are also requirements for borrower eligibility. The eligible borrowers are businesses that are U.S. businesses established prior to March 13, 2020. They can have up to 15,000 employees or up to $5 billion in 2019 annual revenues. They must not be an ineligible business, and for those of you with the slide, we've given you a link to how to find out what those ineligible businesses are. And they must also meet all the conditions and certifications required by the program. The full information on the conditions and certifications can be found on the bostonfed.org website, but I'll highlight a few important ones for you. The borrower must commit to comply with the relevant CARES Act restrictions, including those related to conflicts of interest, limits on compensation, stock repurchases and distributions. There's also a restriction on early repayment of other debt as long as the loans are outstanding. This limitation, however, does not restrict the borrower's ability to make mandatory principal and interest payments as due on pre-existing debt. That's an important exception, I think, that people have had questions about. There's some other exceptions around this that are a little more complicated, but those can be found in the borrower certification documents that are posted on the bostonfed.org website as well. In addition to this, if you turn to the next slide, eligible borrowers may only participate in one of the Main Street lending facilities. By that, I mean you can't get a new loan, a priority loan, and an expanded loan. You have to choose between the three. And an affiliated group of companies is subject to the same restrictions. So if one of the companies takes out one form of these loans, then any affiliates would be restricted to that same type of loan. Eligible borrowers participating in the Main Street facility may also not participate in the primary market corporate credit facility, so you'd have to choose between those two programs. And similarly, affiliated companies would have to choose between the two programs, so they could you could not have affiliates in different programs. If you've got affiliated companies wanting to borrow, they would all have to borrow from one program or the other. This is another point we've gotten questions on. Eligible borrowers that have received loans under the CARES Act PPP program may also receive Main Street loans. And eligible borrowers that have received or will receive an EIDL, an Economic Injury Disaster Loan advance, may also receive a Main Street loan. So the final slide in the deck here just talks about if you are a borrower interested in getting one of these loans, you will need to contact an eligible lender to discuss applying for a loan. The criteria for applying for the loans, as I've described before, are all posted on the bostonfed.org website. Eligible borrowers must submit an application and other required documentation to the eligible lenders. Lenders, this is one we get questions from frequently. Lenders may use their own loan documents. We're not prescribing a form of loan application. And then eligible lenders will determine whether an eligible borrower is approved for the loans. We are encouraging lenders to work with the borrowers affected by COVID-19. To originate and expand such loans to the borrowers. And that's it for my prepared remarks. So I think with that, I will turn it over for questions.
Okay. Hi. Thank you, Teresa. It's Dan again. And thank you for incorporating all of the questions that I got to you early. We have been overwhelmed with questions. And given the time limitations, we're only able to take a few that have been submitted. But for all of you who are sending me questions, and keep sending them, it's not a problem, what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with SBA all the PPP questions, and those will be given directly to, I'll look to see what states you're from and whatever, to your local offices. So that way, and that will connect you to the local offices. And ones on the Main Street program, I will forward onto Teresa. But we have a couple of questions that we had queued in earlier, and I want to get us onto those. And I think that might even bring some other questions along with that. So, first question, first question is from Mr. Nawas from Raytheon Technologies. He is head of the supply chain, and he has a question on the Main Street program.
Thank you very much. And before I ask the question, I do want to thank all the speakers for all the wonderful information that they provided, which I'm sure is going to be very helpful. I know we have a number of Raytheon suppliers on this particular call. So I wanted to ask, one specific to the Main Street Lending Program. So we understand that the new Main Street Lending Program is intended to help provide liquidity assistance for companies distressed due to the COVID crisis. Since the principal point of contact for borrowers will be their own banks, do you expect widespread participation from lenders in the new Main Street Lending Program? In other words, what should a company do if the regular bank is not participating in the program?
Teresa, you want to take that, or would you like me to take that?
Well, I can take it if you like.
Go ahead, Teresa.
Okay.
I was going to say they should report the bank to Teresa. But anyway, yes.
Yeah. So this program is really unlike, as Adam mentioned, any others that we've done before. So it's really hard for us to estimate the level of participation. We have been conducting a lot of outreach, and we hope that the take up by lenders will be good. And unfortunately, at this point, lenders have indicated they're still considering whether to participate. And, given the nature of the program, it's not hard to understand why they're evaluating it carefully. So at this point, we don't have a list of willing lenders or a way to connect borrowers to them, unfortunately. We will continue to think about how we might be able to do this going forward once the lender registration program starts.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Our next question is from Jeff Rossi, who is the chief manufacturing partner with CohnReznick, a regional and national accounting firm. So, Jeff.
Thanks, Ann. And obviously, a thank you to you and your whole team for all of your efforts in the manufacturing sector. It's a tireless effort. You are all wonderful, and I just wanted to start off with a thank you. It's so very much appreciated. I know our clients appreciate it as well. The question for the group today is the Main Street Lending Programs are designed to allow the lenders the ability to collect any information they need to conduct an assessment of each borrower's financial condition at the time of the borrower's application. In order to purchase the 95% of the eligible loan, what information will the Fed need from the borrower and the lender?
So I can take this one as well. So the BostonFed.org website contains links that that describe all of the required documentation that the program is requiring. The lenders may have their own requirements that would be typical when they are making a loan to their customers, and so we would allow them to collect whatever information they would normally collect on their own. Separate from them, there's a series of legal documents, including lender and borrower certifications, the participation agreement and related documents, and a servicing agreement that we would need for the participation. In addition, the Appendix C in our FAQ document contains a list of financial information that will be required by the SPV on an ongoing basis for the purpose of monitoring the credit risk within the portfolio. For large borrowers, the financial requirements should be similar to those that a lender would normally require on both an annual and quarterly basis whenever they underwrite a loan. For some of the smaller borrowers, we understand there may be some differences to what lenders would normally require, particularly on a quarterly basis. We've tried to scale the requirement down to capture just that information that should be reasonably available and sufficient to allow us to assess the overall credit risk within the portfolio. But we do understand that this may be slightly different than what a lender would normally require. We do think this is somewhat mitigated by the fact that we are allowing unsecured loans for some of these smaller loans, while typically the marketplace would not be doing unsecured loans, which is why they would not require the same level of financial information.
Thank you.
Okay, we have another question from Tony Uphoff from ThomasNet. Tony is the CEO of ThomasNet and they work with about 20,000 manufacturers around the country. And he has a question that has a lot to do with reshoring. So, Tony.
Hey, Ann, thank you very much. And let me add my thanks to you and your team and everybody producing the information here. I know we hear regularly from our customers that there's, you know, they need more clarity and help in understanding how to leverage these really fantastic programs. We did a survey recently, and we found that across the 20,000 or so industrial manufacturing companies that are using our platform, many of which are medium-sized businesses, they're now finding the need to reshore much of their supply chains for various reasons, not the least of which is the security of their businesses, as we've seen supply chains of all sorts, not just in PPE, get disrupted around the world. I guess if it's possible, I'd love some perspective of how we best explain how the new program can benefit these medium manufacturers as they look to deal with reshoring, which in some cases is a good thing for their business. In other cases, it's a real challenge for them to be able to tackle.
And Tracy, would you like me to try that one?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think the point of the Main Street Program is to provide financing for on an interim basis. If the company has sufficient financing to keep its ongoing operations in functioning, but they need extra financing to retool or to restructure their operations, including for reshoring, then they can come to the Main Street program and obtain a 5-year term loan that will help them do that. There are no restrictions on the use of the funds under the Main Street program. They do not have to be used for any particular purpose. They're basically funds for the company to use as it sees fit to return to prosperity.
So
thanks very much. Very helpful.
I would just highlight one slight wrinkle to that, you know, this is really meant to help U.S. businesses with a majority of their employees and a significant operations in the U.S. So to the extent that these entities had foreign subsidiaries or affiliates or parents even, I would just caveat that proceeds of Main Street loans may not be used for the benefit of a borrower's foreign parents, affiliates, or subsidiaries.
Understood. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you, Teresa. I mean, I spoke to a company this morning who is taking they have mold, their plastic injection company, they have molds and equipment like that in an overseas plant, and they now feel strongly that it has to be in the United States. For them to basically bring those back and put them in their own plant, it sounds like that cost is fine. That is perfectly acceptable under Main Street. Is that correct?
I mean, without understanding the full details, as long as it is the U.S. entity and the money is being used, you know, to benefit the U.S. business and not that foreign affiliate, then I think that's correct.
Yeah, and these are U.S. companies, and many companies are finding that right now that. Because of what's been happening, that they need to have their supply here. So this is great. And I have one question and I'm sorry if I missed if you said this and I missed it during it. We've had a number of questions about the fact that LIBOR as we know it is going away in 1 or 2 years. Did you discuss what would be the how you do that rate without LIBOR around?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to touch on that, but I forgot to. So we actually started with a SOFR rate in our proposal, and we adjusted to LIBOR based on a preponderance of the feedback we got from the industry. So while we are using LIBOR, we are not mandating a replacement rate when that replacement needs to happen. We are allowing the lenders the flexibility to determine what their replacement rate should be.
Okay. Okay. Well, I want to thank everybody for being on the call and all of our participants, and we have participants from 48 states, so I was very excited. Thank you, Teresa and Adam and Michael for helping us out today and doing this incredibly good call. And I really appreciate you folks doing this. As I said earlier, if you have questions, please do send them to me. Everybody has my email addresses, and I will make sure over the next couple of days that they get responded to and sent to the appropriate people and you copied. So thank you, everyone, for being on the call, and I appreciate everyone's participation. Thank you very much, and have a good rest of your day.
Thank you, Ann. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks a lot.
This concludes today's conference. All participants may disconnect at this time. Thank you for your participation on today's call.